land.
Pate
of the Lord.
Eva,
as if.
Vishwa
of the universe.
Srija, the creators. Vidadati, execute. Yatra, in which. Yay,
they.
Tu, indeed. Ati krita, assigned. Pavata,
of you.
Chakita,
afraid.
Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Though you have no material senses, you are the self-effulgent sustainer of everyone's sensory powers. The demigods and material nature herself offer you tribute. While also enjoying the tribute offered them by their worshippers, just as subordinate rulers of various districts in a kingdom offer tribute to their lord, the ultimate proprietor of the land, while also enjoying the tribute paid them by their own subjects. In this way, the universal creators faithfully execute their assigned services out of fear of you. Translation responsibly. Though they have no material senses, you are the self-effulgent sustainer of everyone's sensory powers. The demigods and material nature herself offer you tribute. While also enjoying the tribute offered them by their worshippers. Just as subordinate rulers of various districts in a kingdom offer tribute to their lord, the ultimate proprietor of the land, while also enjoying the tribute paid them by their own subjects. In this way, the universal creators faithfully execute their assigned services out of fear of you. Okay. Purport. All intelligent living beings should acknowledge the sovereignty of the Lord and willingly engage in devotional service to Him. Such is the consensus of the personified Vedas. But Lord Narayan, while hearing these prayers, may have reasonably asked, since I also have a bodily form with sense organs and limbs, am I not just another doer and enjoyer? Especially since the Supersoul in everyone's heart, in every being's heart, I supervise countless organs and limbs. How am I not implicated in the sum total of everyone's sense gratification? No, the assembled Shrutis here rejoin. You have no material senses, yet you are the absolute controller of all, as expressed in the Svetashvata Upanishad 3.18. Apani pado javano grahita pashat yachakshu sa srinot yakana saveti vejam na chatasya veta tam ahur agriyam purusham puranam. He has no feet or hands, yet he is the swiftest runner and can grasp anything. Though without eyes or ears, he sees and hears. Nobody knows him, yet he is the knower and the object of knowledge. Sages describe him as the supreme original personality of Godhead. The hands, feet, eyes, and ears of the supreme person are not like those of an ordinary conditioned soul, which are derived from false ego, a material substance. Rather, the Lord's transcendentally beautiful features are direct manifestations of his internal nature. Thus, unlike the soul and body of conditioned living beings, the Lord and his bodily form are identical in all respects. Moreover, his lotus hands, lotus feet, lotus eyes, and other limbs are not restricted in their functions. Sri Brahma, the Lord's first creature, glorifies him on this account. Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti pashanti panti kalayanti chiron jaganti ananda chinmaya sad ujwala vigrahasya Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose transcendental form is full of bliss, truth, and substantiality, and thus emanates the most dazzling splendor. Each of the limbs of that transcendental figure possesses in itself the full-fledged functions of all other organs, and he eternally sees, maintains, and manifests the infinite universes, both spiritual and material. Brahma Samhita 5.32. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives an alternative explanation of the phrase Akila Shakti Dhara, the power that the Supreme Lord maintains within himself is akila, free from the limitations of all that is killa, or inferior and insignificant. He energizes the living being's senses as described in the Kena Upanishad 1.2, Shrotasya Shrotam Manaso Mano Yad Vacho Ha Vacham. He is the ear's ear, the mind's mind, and the voice's capacity of speech. And the Svetasvatara Upanishad 6.8 declares, Natasya Kadyam Karanam Chavijate Natat Samas Chavya Dikash Chadrushate Parashya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shruyate Swabhaviki Jnana Bala Kriya Cha. He has no material work to perform, nor any material senses with which to perform it. No one can be found who is equal or greater than him. From the Vedas we hear how that Supreme Lord possesses multifarious energies, the potencies of knowledge, strength, and action, each of which acts autonomously. Indra and the other demigods who rule over mortal beings are themselves servants of the personality of Godhead, as are their superiors, Brahma and his sons, the secondary creators. All of these great gods and sages worship the Supreme Lord by performing their respective services of managing the universe and providing religious guidance for mankind. The powerful controllers of the universe submit themselves in fearful reverence of the Supreme Controller, Lord Sri Vishnu, as the Taittiriya Upanishad 2.8.1 states, Bishasmad vata pavate bishad eti surya bishamad agnish chendras cha mrityur daviti panchama. Out of fear of him the wind blows, out of fear of him the sun moves, and Agni and Indra execute their duties, and death, the fifth of their number, races along out of fear of him. Srila Sridhar Swami prays, Anindriyo piyo deva savakaraka shakti durik savagya savakatacha savasevyam namami tam. The Supreme Lord has no material senses, yet he controls every living entity's sensory functions. He is the knower of everything, the ultimate performer of all action, and everyone's proper object of devotional service. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Om Gyan Timanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swabhadantikam Vancha Kalpata Rubyascha Kripa Sindubhi Evacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishna Vibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita, Gadadha, Srivasadi, Gaura, Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Rama, Hare Hare. So as it says in the beginning of the purport, all intelligent living beings should acknowledge the sovereignty of the Lord and willingly engage in devotional service to him. So it means that Krishna is the supreme God of gods, Deva Deva. This means there are many powerful personalities. Everyone has some Shakti. Everyone has some potency in this world. Everyone has some ability. Everyone's good at something. Everyone can do something. But the nature of the living entity is that he becomes proud and he does not like to subordinate himself to another person. In other words, everyone likes to feel themselves as superior. This is the result of pride. Pride in the material world means that we have some ability and we become attached to that feeling of feeling superior to others due to that ability. So therefore we become conditioned to wanting to put forward or make prominent that ability that we have, because it makes us feel secure. It's like a security mechanism. We need to feel prominent or important in the material world. We want to feel that we're very significant personalities. So that is known in Sanskrit as Maya. Maya means that which is not. In other words, you think you are significant and you think your abilities are very powerful and so forth, and you want to take adoration, you want to receive respect from others, but actually your position is that you're insignificant. Even if you have some ability, there's thousands of living entities who are much better than you at the same thing. Just like on Earth, it is pointed out that the beauty of a woman on Earth, the most beautiful women on Earth, compared to the apsaras in heaven, in Swarga, in the heavenly planets, they are like stick insects or frogs in comparison. But everyone on Earth, they think, oh, I'm very beautiful, like that. Miss Universe, right? I'm most beautiful girl of all. And put the, what's it called? Crown. Yeah, it has another name as well. Tiara. Yeah, put the tiara on. So put the tiara on. I am the most beautiful of all the girls, like that. But it is said that compared to the girls in the heavenly planets, then they're just like frogs. Or like, how do you know? Praying mantis. Stick insect. Does not cut it. Not comparable in beauty, like that. And those girls are nothing compared to the girls in the spiritual world. To Krishna's queens or the gopis in Vrindavan. Even the girls in the heavenly planets, the apsaras, are nothing compared to the girls in the spiritual world, to the gopis, to the eternal. So everyone, we think we are have something good, but compared to, there's thousands of others who have much better abilities than us and much more prominent than us, much better than us. Even the best thing that we're at, So many can defeat us. Just like we may be a great artist. But in the heavenly planets, there are artists who are far superior to us, who have much more ability, much more talent like that. So we become proud of things, but actually we should remember our position like that. I was reading last night, I was reading one of Indrajumna Swami's diaries, and Maharaj was writing, at the end of the diary, he put his offering to Srila Prabhupada, his Vyasa Puja homage in 2006 in the diary. And he made an interesting point, which I hadn't really thought about before, that as a devotee, we have to learn to see ourselves as insignificant amongst other devotees. You know that you're making advancement when you see that you have less good qualities and the other devotees have more good qualities. Just like there's the story in the Mahabharata, that one day Dronacharya, who was the guru of the Pandavas and the Kauravas, the princes, so he sent them out one day. He took the two eldest boys of the dynasty. He took Yudhishthira and Duryodhana. And he said to them, in the beginning of the day, he said, Yudhishthira, go out today into the kingdom and find someone who is inferior to you. Find someone who's your inferior, or who's less than you, like that. And then come back at the end of the day and see if there's someone who is inferior to you. And then he said to Duryodhana, Go out today into the kingdom and find someone who is superior to you. And when you find that person, bring them back at the end of the day. So the two princes went out all day around the kingdom, and at the end of the day they came back. So Yudhishthira came back, and Dronacharya said, "How did you do? Did you find anyone who is inferior to you?" And he said, "I looked all day around the kingdom, and I tried to find someone who was inferior to me, but I could not find anyone. Everyone had some quality which is better than me. There was always someone within the kingdom I found. Everyone had some quality which was superior to me. So I couldn't find anyone who was inferior to me." And he said, then at the end of the day, because it was a Kodeshi, and Yudhishthira was following Nirjal, which means he wasn't drinking water, he said, near the end of the day, he said, "I found one man who was taking water from a well, and then he thought, yes, I found someone who's inferior to me. Because I'm following Nirjal today, I'm not drinking water, and this person's about to drink water." But then he took the bucket out of the well and he gave the water to his horse. Like that. So he thought, then he's also superior to me. Like that. So in this way, this is Dronacharya saw, this is the quality of a devotee. We know we're making advancement when we see everyone else is having better qualities than us. That's a symptom of advancement in Krishna consciousness. But then Duryodhana came back, and Dronacharya said, "How did you go today? And did you find anyone superior to you?" And Duryodhana said, "I tried as hard as I could. All day I travelled around the kingdom to find someone who was better than me, but I couldn't find anyone. There was no one who had superior qualities. There was no one who was better than me." So then Dronacharya, he understood who would be the better of the two to be king of the earth. So the nature of the devotee is that he should feel that others have better qualities. So Indrajyamna Swami was pointing out in his offering, he was saying that there are so many devotees of Prabhupada, so many followers of Srila Prabhupada. And the nature of a devotee is that we see that all the other devotees are better than us. So Indrajyamna Swami was saying that there are so many other disciples and so many other followers of Prabhupada who are better than me. I feel myself insignificant. But then he made an interesting point which I hadn't really thought of before. He said, and what to speak of all the disciples on this planet? Prabhupada is now in a different universe and he has a whole host of disciples in that universe as well. And they're all better than me as well. So really, if we become proud, we don't have anything to be proud about. If we think we are significant and we have some good quality, then what is that good quality, actually? There's thousands of people who are superior to us. So we have to learn and we have to test within our heart. We have to be introspective and see, are we actually developing this mood? That we see others as being better than us. Because that is the mood of the devotee. Just like when devotees used to go to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru, when they would go to him, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, "Dasosmi, I am your servant." Right? That is the mood of a pure devotee. That is the mood of someone who has actual realization in Krishna consciousness. So, as it says here, all intelligent beings should acknowledge Krishna's superiority. So we see that so many other people have better qualities than us. What to speak of Krishna, right? Who has better qualities than Krishna? It says here that all the great lords of the universe bow down to him, right? He is of all the devas, of all the, it says in the Bhagavad Gita, he is Deva Deva. Of all the gods, he is the greatest of all the gods. There is no one more significant than Krishna. So therefore, we have to learn to subordinate ourselves to Krishna. Even with Krishna, we tend to become envious. We tend to think that, yes, Krishna, you are good, but I'm also pretty good. Right? I have some pretty good qualities too. I know you're good because I've read some books and you do some pretty amazing things. But if you you know, if you look closely, you'll see that I'm also pretty good. Right? Maybe not quite as good as you, but, you know, I'm pretty. Not bad. Right? So that is our mentality, isn't it? Yeah? Hands up if you don't have that mentality. Hands up if you do not think like that. Aren't they? All of us, we have some, and this is all based upon envy. We are envious of Krishna. And because we're envious of Krishna, we're envious of everyone else also. And that's why we always want to put ourselves in the superior position, rather than being the inferior personality, rather than being the servant. We prefer to be the Prabhu. But there's only one Prabhu. There's only one Mahaprabhu. And one great master. And everyone else is simply servant. Right? Even the great gods, they subordinate themselves to Krishna. Right? So if it is good enough for them to subordinate themselves to Krishna, then we should also subordinate ourselves. Right? If Lord Brahma is doing it, if Indra is doing it, if Yamaraj is doing it, if Agni is doing it, if Vayu is doing it, right? Wouldn't it be good enough for Bhakta Burfi to do it also? You know, we're so proud because, you know, we know how to say Hari Bol. Right? And we can put Tilak on straight now. Right? We know how to tie a dhoti or a sari. Oh, so we're pretty good. So, but then, if it is good enough for these superior personalities to subordinate themselves to Krishna, then it should be good enough for us also. This should be our quality. And therefore it is said in the Mahabharata, Mahajanyena Kata Sapanta. One must follow in the footsteps of the Mahajans, the great souls, the great personalities. One must follow in their footsteps. And what is their example? They subordinate themselves to Krishna. We see that Lord Brahma subordinates himself to Krishna. Lord Indra subordinates himself to Krishna. There were some pastimes where they didn't subordinate themselves to Krishna, and then what happened? Yeah, they got smashed. Krishna had to humble them. And that's what happens to us. When we think we are very significant, then what happens? Krishna brings you down to size. Right? You think you're very significant. You're trying to impress all the devotees. We want pratishtha. We want to be prominent amongst the Vaishnavas. Right? This is a disease. This is a great weed in the heart. Right? This is a impurity or an anatta, an unwanted thing in the heart, that we want to be praised or recognized amongst the community of Vaishnavas. That's our consciousness. I want to be significant. I want to be recognized like that. But that's not the mood of a devotee. In South India, one of the great acharyas, I think it's Ramanujacharya or Jamunacharya, one of them gives the example that a Vaishnava is like salt. Right? Why is a Vaishnava like salt? Okay, I'll take one more answer. Yeah.
Because he can fit anywhere.
He can
fit anywhere.
He can fit anywhere, yeah. Even in sweet rice. He doesn't fit in sweet rice. Yeah, melts into nothing. Yeah, that's close to what it melts into nothing. Like that. That's close to what it is. Like that. When it's what?
It's always like good when it is in proper quantity.
Yeah, just like us. Yeah, we're good when we're in proper quantity. Too much of us is not good. Like that. Yeah, not exactly like that. Similar to that, but it is said that a Vaishnava is like salt because he always remains unseen. Just like you can't see salt within the preparation. Right, the salt's in the preparation, but you can't see the salt. You can see the rice, the dal, the sabji. You can see all the different ingredients, but you can't see the salt. But you can perceive the salt's presence. Why? Because the salt makes everything nice. It makes everything tastier. That's what a Vaishnava is like. Right? He does not try to put himself forward or become prominent. He remains hidden, but he makes everything very palatable. Right? He makes everything very pleasant for the rest of the devotees. That should be the mood of the devotee. right? That he enhances the association of the community of the Vaishnavas. He enhances the taste within the sampradaya. He makes everything very sweet, very palatable. But he himself remains hidden. Right? And this is what it means to be an expert servant. An expert servant does not try to be prominent. An expert servant remains hidden, right? Almost unseen. But he is there because everything is arranged perfectly. Just like when we're serving prasad, right? Now, when you take around the prasad, what is the right way to take the prasadam around? What's that? Yeah, first serve the senior devotees. Yep, that's an important point. Then what? Drinks are at the end?
After serving the main course.
Yeah, that's wrong. The drinks should come first. Like that. Devotees need to be trained as to what the order is. That's an important point also. The point is, or one of the important points is that when you serve the prasad, there should not be any words coming from the mouth of the server. You know, just like sometimes, you know, devotees go around, rice, 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 and there's another devotee. Subji, 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 and there's another devotee. Salad, 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 salad. Like, I know what it is. Right? It's salad. I can see it is salad. It has lettuce in it and tomato and cucumber. It is salad. Right? We don't need a devotee to go salad, 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 salad. That's not the way to serve. Right? The way to serve is that the server should be silent while serving. Right? No word should be spoken. He brings the prasad across and he brings it in such a way that the person who is taking the prasad can see what's in the bucket or what's in the serving utensil. Sometimes people just walk past you with a bucket. Yeah, just walk past with a bucket. Oh, that's nice. Yeah. what was in that bucket? Like that. That's also not the right way to serve. Right? You bring the prasad, for example, you have the khichdi, right? Then you hold the khichdi bucket and you bring it in front of the devotee, right? And you stand in front of the devotee. Right? And it says that the prasadam should be served in the way that a mother serves the child. Because 50% of digestion is in the service. Right? It's not just what you eat, right? It's how it is served. You know, if someone is serving too quickly or too aggressively or, you know, like that, it's not palatable, it's not pleasant, it doesn't aid your digestion, it disturbs the mind. And then you can't digest. Right? So when you serve, you have to serve in the mood of a mother, right? Serving the child, right? With love and affection. It is, as Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Instruction, it is Priti Lakshana. Priti Lakshana means it's an exchange of love. One of the six exchanges between devotees is to offer prasad and receive prasad. Right? You don't just, you know, do one of pakora? Yeah. Yeah, that's not love. Yeah, pakora. What's that? That's not love. No, it's the way it is served. That's what's important. It's not just what is served. The prasad has to be palatable. That's 50% of the digestion. 50% of digestion is the palatableness of the prasada. It should smell very attractive. It should taste very nice. Right? It should be spiced properly. It shouldn't be too like dripping in ghee or sugar or like this. That doesn't make prasad nice. It has to be very palatable, but also it has to be served in the right consciousness. Then it becomes digestible. Then it becomes very pleasant. Prasad becomes an exchange of love between the devotee. So when we're serving, we should just bring the khichdi, for example, in front of the devotee, and you just put the spoon within the khichdi, and you just move the spoon around several times. Right? Just like, you know, like, because, you know, if you're standing someone moving a spoon around the bucket, it means obviously you're asking them without saying anything, would you like some? And the devotee will say, no, thank you. Or the devotee will say, yes, please. And then you put it onto the plate. Right? And then you have to be very conscientious of not giving too much to the devotee. Right? We're very famous around the world in the Hare Krishna movement for piling prasad on people's plates. All right? But if you go to Gopal's very often, you'll see there's so much left over on the plate. There shouldn't be anything left on their plate. That means you put too much on their plate. It's an offence to throw prasad away. Right? If you waste prasad in this lifetime, right? If you throw prasadam in the bin, if you leave anything on your plate and throw it in the bin in this lifetime, your next lifetime, you will be deprived of that much prasadam. Right? It's a sin. Right? It's an aparad. It's an offence to throw Krishna's prasad in the bin. Right? Don't put it on your plate unless you can eat it. Now, if you can't eat it, don't put it on your plate. Right? And if we're serving, we should make sure we don't put too much on people's plates. Right? You serve very nicely, very slowly in the mode of goodness. Right? You take the khichdi, you move the spoon, the devotee signals, yes, you know, put some prasad on my plate, or yes please, or whatever they signal. Then you begin to serve slowly, one spoon, and you're attentive. You look at the devotee, you make eye contact. Right? And you see, is the devotee satisfied? And when the devotee is satisfied, they'll put their hand out. Actually, when you're serving, the person who is receiving the prasad, he doesn't really have to speak either. You know, he can just say, or you know, I mean, he can speak, but he doesn't really even need to. Like you offer the, if you come before them with a bucket and you begin to stir, and if that devotee doesn't say anything, right, that means they want prasadam. So then you begin to serve, and when the devotee is satisfied, they just put their hand out. That's it. Right? We shouldn't also be in this system, which is very sometimes prevalent, that you know the devotee's got their hand out, and you're still like you know. Trying to put it around the side and put some over here and then, you know, like that. And then, you know, it's only when there's two hands, like, waving in front, you know. Sometimes I've gone to some Indian devotees' houses and they say, you know, we'll stop serving when you have two hands in front, waving. You know, that means you've had enough of that. But that's not actually culture, right? Culture means when the devotee says that's enough, that's enough. Right? You should serve the Vaishnavas the same way you serve your guru and the same way you serve Krishna. Right? If your spiritual master says that's enough, right, you don't just keep putting like you know a little bit more around the side and don't worry, Maharaj, you'll like it. You know? It's like no, that's not, you never do that to your spiritual. Why would you do that to a devotee? Was the devotee just got an unlimited digestive capacity? Of course it's true sometimes on feasts. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he would serve out the devotees in Jagannath Puri at the feasts, he would serve with his hand, and Lord Chaitanya's hand was 12 inches long. Because Lord Chaitanya was 7 foot tall, so that means his hand was that big. And he would serve the prasad with his hand onto the devotees' plates, and he would put enough on everyone's plate for 7 men. Right? So everyone would be putting on everyone's plate, 7 men. And then none of the devotees would eat until he would sit down. So he'd be serving everyone in ecstasy, all the devotees in ecstasy, but everyone would just be sitting there, no one would eat. And then Swarup Damodar, his personal secretary, would come to him and say, Mahaprabhu, you have to sit down, otherwise the devotees won't eat. So he would sit down, then he would say, Hari Bol. Right? And when he would say Hari Bol, then everyone would take prasad. And then everyone would begin to take. So sometimes at the feasts, then we may keep putting a bit more on the devotees' plates. But it doesn't mean, you know, it's not like every morning's a feast. You know, it doesn't mean like, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, you know, we have the Sunday feast, and then we have the Monday feast, and then we have the Tuesday feast, and then we have the Wednesday breakfast feast, and then we have the Thursday lunch feast. It's not like that every day. You can do that in your 20s, but I can tell you now, when you get to your 30s, it all changes. Your digestion goes... It's going along quite nicely and just goes and it just starts like creeping along. You know that saying, over the hill? You know, you get to like the top of your life, like the peak, that's about 34. When you're about 34 you get to like your peak, but after that, that's the top of the hill. After that you start going over the hill. Right? It's just all downhill from there. Right? Your digestion gets weaker, it doesn't get stronger like that. So we have to serve the devotees nicely. That should be the consciousness while we're serving. So this is what a devotee is like. This is a first-class servant. We should become a first-class servant of the spiritual master, a first-class servant of Krishna, a first-class servant of the Vaishnavas. It means we should not even be seen. Right? Our service should be so nice, right, that it's almost as if we're not even there. But everything is arranged for Krishna. Everything is arranged for the spiritual master. Everything is arranged for the devotees. And that's why a devotee is like salt, right? He's practically unseen, right? But although he is unseen, right, everyone experiences his presence, right? And everything is made more palatable by his presence. That's what a devotee has. And that's why it's said that a first-class servant knows the desire of the guru before the guru even indicates what his desire is. Right? A second-class servant has to be told. Right? Oh, you know, can you do this for me? Right? And you say, okay, no problem, then you do it. That's second class. Third class means the guru says to you, this is what I want. Right? And then, you know, you either forget to do it, or you don't do it properly, or you have to be told again and again and again. Right? That is third class. Right? A good servant only has to be told once. But that's second class. First class is you don't even have to be told. Right? You know the mind and the heart of the spiritual master and Krishna so well that everything is arranged. Right? And no one even has to indicate to you what needs to be done. Right? You have such good, you're so in tune with the desires of Krishna, with the desires of the Guru, with the desires of the Vaishnavas, everything is arranged, first class. Right? The devotee arrives, the devotee's been travelling for a long distance, and they arrive, and everything's taken care of. Right? Their room is already warm, right? There's water in their room, there's tilak in their room, right? Prabhupada's books are in their room, practically whatever they could think of, whatever they want. Their towels are there in their room, already set up. Their bed is already made. Right? Everything is already done. That's first class. Huh? They don't even have to ask for anything. And as soon as they do ask for anything, immediately it's done. So that's the kind of servant that we have to become towards Krishna. Not second class, even. Second class means we're told, and then yes, we do it immediately. Third class means, you know, you forget everything all the time, and that's useless. Prabhupada himself, if someone made a mistake, then Prabhupada would pardon that mistake once. Like if someone did something wrong, then Prabhupada would pardon it. Like if, you know, they'd made a mistake, Prabhupada would correct it, say, no, this is not correct, but he would let that go. But if they did it a second time, Prabhupada would become angry. I've already told you. Right? One thing that you have to understand, you cannot waste the spiritual master's time. Right? When you're serving the guru, right, when you're serving the devotees, when you're serving Krishna, you cannot waste their time. Everything has to be paka. Everything has to be on time. Right? They haven't got time just for you to make mistakes. They haven't got time for you to... Just like I remember one time I was reading in my spiritual master's like servant's diary, in the disciple newsletter, and one of the devotees, my spiritual master, was going on a riding retreat in Hong Kong. So they drove for 2 hours up through the mountains of Hong Kong. You know, if you go to Hong Kong, there's mountains all around. So they went for 2 hours up into the mountains to one cabin, which was up there. He was going to spend a week there just riding. So they drove for 2 hours, and when they got there, they got out of the car, and he said, okay, where's the key? Right? And the devotee said, oh, I forgot the key. And he just, you know, what sort of service is that? It's useless. Useless servant. Right? Somehow or other they got into the house. You know, they, you know, did something and they got into the house. But the point is, what sort of service is that? Right? So it means to be a first-class servant, everything has to be paka. Right? Prabhupada sometimes, he would... Harisori Prabhu, because Harisori Prabhu was Srila Prabhupada's personal servant for about a year and a half, from 74, I think, to about 70. No, I think 75 to 77. And then Harisori Prabhu said, Prabhupada, if you did something wrong, then he would forgive. But if you did it the second time, he would become angry. He would yell at you and chastise you very heavily. But he said, then Prabhupada had this third level. Right, and this third level was that he wouldn't even speak to you. Right, his lips would just tremble in like anger. Prabhupada would just be like, you know, just angry. But he wouldn't even say anything to you. That's how annoyed he was, like that. And Harry saw, he said, that was the worst. He said, that was worse than when Prabhupada would yell at you. You know, if Prabhupada would yell at you, you know, I've already told you, right? Like, if Prabhupada would yell at you, that was heavy. But if Prabhupada didn't even speak to you, and Prabhupada would just walk out. Just like one time, if you go to Vrindavan, to Prabhupada's house in Vrindavan, if you go into the courtyard out the back and then up the stairs, then Prabhupada has a balcony and he has his bedroom and his bathroom up there, like that. And one time Harisori Prabhu walked out, Prabhupada was up there in his room, and Prabhupada and Harisori walked out, and just by habit, not like thinking, just by habit, he just locked the door as he walked out, and then he shut the door, and then he locked the door, and then went down the stairs. So it means Prabhupada was locked up there. Prabhupada couldn't get down because the door was locked from the other side. But he just did it out of habit. You know, just went and he just locked the door and he just went down. And then about 2 hours later, someone came running to find him. Prabhupada wants to see you. Prabhupada wants to see you. And he came running. You know, then he immediately thought, oh, no. You know, and then he came running. And Srila Prabhupada had been up there for 2 hours. Because back in those days, there wasn't that many devotees at the Krishna Balaram Mandir. There was only 30 or 40 devotees and everyone was doing service. It was the middle of the day. Prabhupada was up there for 2 hours looking over the balcony, waiting for someone to come so he could come down. Because he had service to do. And Prabhupada was up there for 2 hours. And finally some devotee walked past and he said, go and get Harisori. Like that. So Harisori came and he ran up and they unlocked the door and opened the door, and Prabhupada just didn't even look. He just walked past. Right, so angry, he didn't even chastise him. Right? That's you don't want to be it. Put the spiritual master in that position. So the point is that we should be like salt. Devotees should be like salt. Our service should be so nice that the other devotees don't even know we're there, and that our service is so nice that it just enhances the other devotee's service. Right? This is the best position that a devotee can take, to become the servant of the servant of the servant of the devotees. We just serve the other devotees. We assist them in their service. We make their service easier. Right? That's the mood of the devotees. Right? To make the other devotees' service easier. To facilitate everyone else's service. Right? So that is the pure mood of a Vaishnava. Right? And that's the mood that we have to learn in order to become. So we see here that these exalted persons are bowing their heads to Krishna. Lord Brahma, Lord Indra, Yamaraj, like that. So the basic message is, if it is good enough for them, then it is good enough for us. Right? If we don't serve Krishna nicely, then that means that we are still envious of Krishna. Right? If we don't serve the Guru nicely, it means we are envious of the Guru. If we don't serve the devotees nicely, it means we are envious of the devotees. Like that. So we should overcome our envy and become a first-class servant of the devotees, and follow in the footsteps of these great personalities. So we'll stop there and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. I was not expecting to give class. We just drove from the farm and I just pulled up in front of the temple because we drove here to listen to Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj give class this morning. So I was unprepared to give class. I didn't even know I was going to give class. I was actually desiring to hear Maharaj speak. But okay, so any questions or comments on what we discussed? Should be an order for serving. Yeah. So first of all, you serve the drink. That's first. You serve water, or if there's a drink, like if there's a nimbu pani, it means if there's a lemon water or lemon drink, you serve that first. The drink should go around in the very beginning, before anything else. Then it depends on what the cuisine is, right? If it's Bengali, prasad means there'll be a lot of rice. Right, that's the staple. Rice, the grain is the staple. When we take prasad, the grain is the staple. Like the chapati or the rice will be the staple. So it depends what style of prasadam it is. In Bengal, they don't have chapatis. They just have the rice. So the rice is served. But then in Gujarati, in northern India, then they take roti or chapatis. So it means the chapati goes first, like that. So if you were serving a feast and You serve the drink, and then you should serve chapatis, right? Or the sabjis, you should take one or two sabjis and then the chapatis, like that. But that should be the order, so everyone can begin. And then amongst the sabjis, you should take the wet sabjis before the dry sabjis. So there's a juicy, wet kind of sabji, you should take it first. And amongst the sabjis, you should take the bitter sabjis first. If there's like a bitter preparation, like a bitter melon or something like that, that goes first. You don't take that at the end, right? Jabhataka Swami says you have that first because then everything after that tastes good. There's other reasons as well, but that's why. You don't have that, like, you know, sometimes devotees are serving the feast, then like halfway through the feast someone, oh there's bitter melon, you know, and starts serving it out. So like the feast has already been served, it's like it's the wrong time. It's not palatable, it's not the right time. So bitter, and then sabjis means dry wet to dry. Wet first, then dry. And then light sabjis and then heavy sabjis. Like if there's deep fried curd and eggplant and potato, like a heavy sabji, and there's just the spinach, just a suck, right, just a spinach, you take the light sabji before the heavy. So you just remember these basic rules, right? Light before heavy, wet before dry, like that. Bitter always goes first, that's basically it. So if you're serving chapatis, you'll either take the chapatis first, or you'll take one or two sabjis and then you'll take the chapatis, right? So everyone can begin to take the prasad nicely. And then you'll serve like pakoras and chutney, those kind of things, next. If you're doing a feast where there's all these different preparations. So it means if there's a chutney, the chutney must go with the pakoras. You also see that in sometimes they're serving out prasad and the pakoras come, then 10 minutes later the chutney comes. Like, what's the point? Why serve the chutney 10 minutes after the pakora? You need the chutney, they should be together. Also, you just got to be mindful of all those kind of things. And then if there's any like samosas or any like savoury things, then you can serve that in the middle. And then if it's a feast where there's chapatis or puris or something, the puris, the chapatis go first, the wheat goes first, and then at the end, after you've served the puris and sabjis and then the savouries and the chutneys and so forth, then you serve the rice and dal, which should also go together. Right? Rice should go and then dal should go on top or with. Not like that. Not like, you know, once again, rice comes and then, you know, the dal comes like 10 minutes. What's the point? Why'd you serve the rice if the dal wasn't there? So that should be the order, basically. If there's no chapatis or puris, if it's just a rice feast, this is rice, then you serve the rice in the beginning, like you'd serve the chapati. Like after one or two subjects, then you bring the rice first. And then you bring the dal with the rice because there's no others like that. And then you serve the sweets. Right, you serve the sweets at the end. And when you serve the sweets, you should serve the least sweet and then the most sweet at the end. Because if you have the sweetest thing first, then you won't be able to taste the others. So if something's less sweet, you take that first, and the more sweet things you bring after that. So that's the basic kind of rule. The point is, when you serve prasad, everything should keep going around. Because like Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj is here, he's the acharya. Like he knows all of this science of serving better than anyone. He's like the best. And when we had a feast at his Gurukul in Mayapur in 1996, I was there with Radha Charanpuru and some of my godbrothers, and we went down to the Gurukul and we had a feast. And Maharaj had... And the point is, when you have a feast, you need enough servers. You know, it's also useless if you only got two or three servers and there's 100 people. Just not going to work. You know, if you've got 100 people, you need probably 10 servers to get it done properly, right? So then you begin serving out, and then as everything gets served out, then whenever you've gone around with the rice all the way around, then you start again. We were there with Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj when we're having a feast at his Gurukul, and there's probably only about 15 or 20 of us taking the prasad, but they just kept bringing it around. So like every 5 minutes the rice would come around again, and that's the way to serve. It's not that, you know, you put like a massive pile on at the beginning because you don't know if it's going to run out or not. Right, that's actually not good for digestion. You just eat, and they serve, and you eat. And when you begin to get to the end of what you're eating on your plate, right, then you know, oh yeah, I'm a bit more hungry, and then they bring it around again, and they serve it again. That way you never overeat, and you never put too much on your plate. Throwing out prasadam is, it's aparad, it's offence, it's sinful. It's an offence to Krishna. Krishna gives you his remnants, and you say, oh yeah, no, put it in the bin. That's offensive, like that. So therefore, everything should be served out continuously, nicely, again and again and again. And then, near the end, then one devotee can go around and say to anyone, you know, Prabhu, do you want anything in particular? You know, is there anything else that you want more of? Because Prabhupada said, ultimately, there's no hard and fast rules for taking prasad. Yeah. So someone might be at the end of the feast and they just get very enthusiastic to have pakoras again. So if that's what they want, then give it to them. Yeah. And then they'll take it in. Or, you know, someone, you know, just gets very enthusiastic to drink the whole bucket of sweet rice. Yeah. So then you give it to them if that's what they want. That's the basic right there. It gets even more detailed as well, but that's the basic. We just need to know the basic like that, because devotees don't know how to serve quite often. So we should know how to serve. This is called Vaishnava culture and etiquette. We should know what the culture is, because there is a culture in how to serve. It's not just, you know, come in, whatever's on the ground, to start, you know, serving it out. You know, if there's salad, the salad will go like we said, like with the pakoras, that kind of area. First the main things, like sabji and puris, and if there's salad, then that can come, and then pakoras and so forth like that. But you'll see, like, you go upstairs sometimes and, you know, someone starts bringing the milk sweets around first. And, you know, like, you're just looking at them. You know, there's nothing on my plate. Why are you offering me sweets? It's just the wrong mentality, right? Drink should come first. Sometimes, you know, you're already eating for a few minutes and there's no drink. You know, where's the drink? Drink should already be there, like that. In other words, there should be a basic order, and devotees should follow the basic order like that. That's basically the thing. So.
The question is related to this question. Like, is it practically possible to don't speak while we are serving? Because many times, like, devotees who are chanting prasad, they are speaking with other devotees. And sometimes, like, if we are late, devotees, he is about to finish his prasad, we just don't go with all the items. We just go and ask him if he wants anything more.
Yeah, that's a little different. But the point is, generally, all the devotees should come on time. You know, we've got a crazy system now where everyone just comes, you know. Like, class finishes. You watch, class finishes probably in the next few minutes, right? Most of them won't even be up there for another half an hour, which is just, you know, it's not, prasad happens after class. Everyone should take the prasad up together. Devotees should sit down, right? And then the devotees are going to serve out. They begin to serve out, right? And everything should be done nicely. Okay, sometimes, because it's a temple, like, people will come late, but generally devotees should all take together at the same time, right? And there doesn't need to be speaking. It doesn't need to be there like that. Okay, if someone comes late, you might say, okay, what do you want? And, like, that's maybe practical, but generally, if you're serving at a feast or if everyone's taking prasad together, then you don't need to speak. Whoever's serving you doesn't need to speak. You know, even if the devotee's speaking to another devotee, if someone's standing in front of you with a bucket of khichdi and they're, you know, moving their spoon through the khichdi, then obviously they're asking you, would you like some khichdi? So even you're speaking to another devotee, you say, no, Prabhu, it's okay. Or you say, yes, please, you know, and they'll put some on. But devotee does not have to speak. That way you stay like salt. Bhakta salt ki? Any other question or comment? No, it's not done like that. No one does that in India. Sweet also, because in Ayurveda there's six tastes, right? There's sweet, sour, salty, pungent, astringent, and what's the other one? Bitter, right? They're the six tastes in Ayurveda. So rice is sweet. It's madhurya. So when it says you take sweet in the beginning, it doesn't just mean sweets. It means sweet foods like that. Many of the fruits are madhurya. They're sweets. They're sweet. Like that. So it doesn't just mean just eating the sweet in the beginning. In some Indian cuisines, like in Gujarati, they take a little sweet in the beginning. Like that. In Gujarati, they do. In South India, they also take a little sweet in the beginning. But in Bengali, they don't take any sweet in the beginning. Like that. But they take rice, which is sweet. Like that. So this is the system. Is that okay? That's the basic system on this. Papadam means it's like a chapati or a puri. So it comes in the beginning. Like that, so. Any other questions or comments? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.